recording the opening to a podcast episode is possibly the worst thing I've ever had to do in my life. It's the most painful, sacrificial thing I've ever done. But I forgot how difficult it was, and I came on here that I did an audio I had to delete a minute ago where I just started talking about how I've been jerking it, and I thought that wasn't the introduction that this needed after, I think it has been well over a year, possibly even 2 years since I did a last podcast episode. I've just been busy, I've been jerking it, it's been so long I've been jerking it. I'm at uni now, crazy. But I thought, I've been facing winter in Edinburgh, which is very dark and really depressing. Oh, it's dismal. So I thought I'd do a little podcast episode because I've just not been feeling myself. And there's nothing that makes me feel more myself than listening to myself talk for an unreasonable amount of time. This episode I wanted to do is about synthetic voices and sexism in automated voices. But you maybe have read a couple of like Vox Pop articles like about kind of Alexa, for example, being she's been the subject of quite a lot of discussion, you know, things like Alexa, Cortana, Siri, all female assistant, digital assistants, and there's a really interesting discussion to be had, and I thought it would be a good time to do an episode. So I would like to preface this very briefly. We will get on with the show, so to speak, by saying that I received a big fat 48, which is fucking awful, FYI, for this essay. I don't want to say this is my comeback era, but I do fear that that is what it is. And I'd like to go in also saying that I do have a thesis in a way about this, because obviously I wasn't going to be kind of researching this. I think in a lot of other episodes I kind of research things quite impartially, which I think can be nice, but also at the same time, as I say, this was based on an essay and my thesis, just for some transparency, I suppose, so you know that, you know, I suppose I did have an agenda, was that assistive technology does have a gender gap and that synthesized speech is often gendered. And I would like to define synthesized speech, because before this, before I went down this rabbit hole, I was kind of confused by what this quite broad term meant. So synthesized speech, I'll also refer to it as assistive technology, that tends to be kind of the tends to go hand in hand, is a digital voice that generally, like I say, tends to be an assistant of some kind, but that is not, you might just immediately think of Siri, Cortana, Alexa. How I began talking about this in this particular essay was talking about the voices of the London Underground. So if you have been on any kind of underground system or any bus, any kind of bougie bus system that has spoken announcements, so on the London Underground you will get Mind the Gap, you will get here's the, you know, the name of the next station, safety announcements, all of these things. And something that I found really interesting that I'd remembered was going up to London from Brighton with my mum when we were younger. I think we were going up to see Wicked, which I don't know how that is still playing in London, playing anywhere actually. I'm 21 nearly, and I think I was probably about 8 when I went and saw that. And my mum turned around and she said to me, listen to those voices of the London Underground, like, that we are on currently. Why are the men doing all the safety announcements? So it was all the men that were saying, please mind the gap. I'm doing the See It, Say It, Sorted campaign, which everyone that's ever been on a train has probably been bombarded with at least once. And all the women were doing kind of informative announcements. So they were saying what the station was, that you were currently, and what the station that was upcoming was. And also, I think on the London Underground, you get the doors will open on the left, those kinds of things. Which is kind of interesting, but I don't think enough to stand on its own ground. You know, obviously my mum turned around and said to me, you know, this is because people don't like listening to instructions from women, you know. All the men are doing the kind of instructional announcements and the women are doing the assistive announcements. So researching this via TfL, which is the London Transport for London official website, they had a very useful list for me of who did the voices, who currently voices the each individual system on the London Underground, and who, you know, that changes according to stations. And 8 of 11 of the all of the underground lines, women voice all of the announcements. So it's not the case that on all underground lines, women will only do certain announcements, men will do other ones. And on the other three lines, male voices are only used for safety announcements. So, like I say, Mind the Gap, CSA Sorted, campaign message. And it is weird that on these other three, you know, why would you not just follow suit with the rest of the eight underground lines and only have women doing all of the announcements? I thought that was quite strange. Got a couple of reasons there that this is worthwhile thinking about, because it does sound a bit ridiculous going, oh, I think the London Underground voices are sexist. And I think that's not the point I'm trying to make here. But I think the history of synthesized speech technology is very interesting. And that the first key example, I think, really, that I could find was in 1956 fighter planes in the United States that were narrated by women to give, you know, like safety announcements. And this is obviously for the pilot's benefit. So if they're focusing on flying through the clouds as you do, you're getting these kind of warning announcements, safety, kind of warnings, I suppose, on your dashboard, the equivalent of your oil light going on, but it's a woman and she's telling you that you're about to fall 30,000 feet out of the air. And these were very quickly nicknamed Sexy Sally and Bitching Betty, which is obviously the funniest thing you've ever heard if you're a pilot in the 1950s and you hate your wife. They did have male voices later, but this was a new system and they immediately opted to have female voices. And a couple of places like War History Online, they claim that this was because of our association or the reason they chose to use women, female voices for this. Some have said it's because it's sonically easier, or you get more clarity of the female voice generally because they're higher, easier to, it cuts through sound. It cuts through kind of, if you're in a plane, it's extremely noisy. You're getting gunned down. God, I feel like I'm there. Like, I'm getting a little bit nervous. Like, I feel I'm on that plane. Then it's somewhat potentially easier to hear a woman's voice. This was disproven in a couple of studies. And it was actually found that male voices were sometimes considered clearer when there's more background noise. But there's still this kind of idea that women's voices cut through things clearer. The other reason that they gave was, and I think this kind of makes sense, but doesn't make sense. It doesn't clear it of its guilt, I suppose, is that women were massively involved in the operating of telephones. So almost all telephone operators at the time after World War II were women, because obviously all the men fucked off and got shot and whatnot. And the women were left at home to answer telephones and be switchboard operators, essentially. So a couple of sources have said that's the reason why female voices were, in the very first place, chosen for fighter planes. So even though later they did have male voices narrating these things, the male pilots opted time and time again, you know, excessively for the female voices. And I don't know what kind of perverted kicks they were getting out of Bitching Betty and Sexy Sally, but here we are. So we kind of now understand that there is this preference for female voice. And this is kind of like often said in science of sonics and the science of kind of gendered voices, which is a really weird emergent kind of area in what do you call it, feminist studies, science and technology studies, feminist, STS. But it's really interesting. And there is this preference for female voices, but a 2014 study that I was looking at showed that these female voices were only preferred when they were being, quote, helpful. And conversely, male voices were only preferred when they were being, quote, authoritative, which is really strange. But also not really that strange when you think about it, because we're obviously going to prefer voices doing what we think they should do. You know, you don't want, I don't fucking know, Ronald McDonald narrating your erotica. Or maybe you do, but it doesn't quite sit right. There's a couple of really interesting examples of companies actually tapping into this preference for the female voice in certain scenarios, and this kind of specificity of when the female voice, the higher voice, is wanted or desired in a certain scenario. So, for example, the BMW car, I think this was in the 1990s, used when they were introducing their sat navs and kind of vocalized narration within a car. This was in Germany as well, obviously. They had a female voice doing the sat nav and obviously saying, turn left, turn right. And they had such a massive volume of complaints about the fact that she was bossy. They did not like a woman receiving, they didn't like receiving directions from a woman, which sounds like something that my Hungarian granddad would say. Another example of this kind of being used to the advantage of capitalism would be a Japanese brokerage firm that only used female voices for giving stock quotes and assistive advice. I'm not sure what else that would entail, but they do use male voices only to assist transactions and make sure transactions go through. So we can kind of explain away this phenomenon with the idea that female voices, you know, we kind of associate women, for example, with kind of subservient sorts of technology. And I think this is an example of something, as is almost the case in sexism and misogyny, this is something that is created by its culture and also perpetuates its own culture. So when we think of women as servile, we use technology, female voices, to do servile things, and then we reinforce the idea that women are servile. It's kind of a vicious circle. And there's a really good UNESCO report, 29 UNESCO report on Siri and the voices of women being used in assistive technology. And it tells us, well, suggests that the female voice technology purports to diminish the sense of fear that is often associated with advanced technology. So when you think about AI, you think about maybe the Terminator, you think about that's being played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, versus you think about Scarlett Johansson in Her by Spike Jones, and how subservient her voice was, how, you know, she was even sexualized in that film. She was literally became an object of romance. So ultimately, we can see that, as Hempel puts it quite neatly, when we want our technology to help us, but we still want to be the bosses of it, we opt for a female interface. There's a really interesting quote also by Deborah Cameron, who is a gender linguist, so this is right up her alley. She says, when we ask why machines are given genders, for instance, it is a question about desire, about the culture that shapes our bodies and technology. So I think the question that we really need to ask is, why do we prefer these female voices when only when they are being assistive and not when they are being assertive? Like I said before, with the war planes, there are quite a few theories that talk about this idea of women having been in these roles, assistive roles. So, for example, the secretary, and there's a really nice piece by Lingle and Crawford in 2020 that talk about how the female voice being used in these assistive devices is not just a quaint homage to, you know, the secretary or the personal assistant being a woman, but it is in fact a reflection of entrenched gender stereotypes of women's capacities and values. And there is a nice history of the secretary, which I think I would just like to preface by saying the secretary used to be, the word secretary used to actually mean the desk on which office workers, bankers, men often would do their work. Soon this job was kind of humanized and was turned into an actual role. It was not just part of the office man's job. It became its own role within itself that was given to men and was considered this quite intellectual job. It was quite, you know, admin focused. It would involve kind of orchestrating multiple different things to smooth over life's difficulties for the person that you were working for. Ultimately, you were being someone's secretary, you were sorting things out for them. And it was quite a prestigious role to have, you know, if you're working with the best, you know, banker or scientist of your time and you're being his PA or his assistant, this could be quite, you know, a good job opportunity for you. But as soon as the war came and women were given these jobs, and this became a kind of, you know, I immediately associate secretary with kind of women. I kind of even think about the sexualized, when am I not thinking about sexualized image of women? But particularly in this instance, you kind of think of like, oh, sexy office worker. I think that's what I think of when I think of secretary, less so with personal assistants, but this has become a sexualized job. As soon as it's given over to women, it stops being intellectual, it stops being high achieving, it stops even being kind of considered a job. It's like, oh, you're a secretary, you know, you're just a secretary, in the same way you're just a housewife. So like I said, this is kind of a vicious circle. This self-cannibalizing snake of misogyny is kind of born from women being put into these roles because of these supposed biological differences. And this is from Connell, who talks about this, Raymond Connell, who has a brilliant gender theory book, and I cannot for the fuck of me remember what it is, 2021 anyway. Women are pushed into these assistive roles because of these supposed biological differences or qualities, such as having a nurturing nature, and, you know, the ability to kind of orchestrate admin in a way for men. These roles that women are then put into affirm the existence of these qualities, and we associate these women with these qualities. So women are continually within media and even in real life depicted as within these roles. So it's kind of evident, self-evident, that this is not going to be harmless, although we might, maybe it's tempting to think, you know, who cares if we really associate these women, you know, if women in films, for example, are depicted as, you know, secretarial, or even in just our mind's eye, we think of, you know, the sexy secretary fucking your boss. Like, you know, it's not a serious job to have this association of women with subservience. Maybe is not that serious. Does it really manifest in real life? Well, according to this 2019 UNESCO report, that is the case, that it does manifest in real life. And this kind of association is strengthened, especially if you think in children, you know, how you speak to your Alexa, your Siri, or Cortana. And I've always wondered about this, you know, if you're not teaching your child to speak properly to even a piece of technology, you know, what is that doing to their brain? And maybe it's not that much. Maybe that's just me being prospective worried mother. But still, so this UNESCO report argues that this repeated exposure to these female voice smart speakers, which are, it notes, unwaveringly polite in the face of blatant degradation, responding to the verbal prompt, "You're a slut," with "I would blush if I could." And that's what, I think that's what Siri said, which I think Apple actually changed it. Or maybe it was Alexa, and that'd be Microsoft. So they argue that this hard codes a connection between the female voice and subservience. I think that's, I don't think it's a reach to say that, but I think my kind of first thought was, you know, I know the difference between a person walking down the street. I know that I'm not going to call her a slut and not get, you know, bopped in the jaw. And whereas I know that my armless, legless, faceless box is probably just going to be as nice as it can, because that's, you know, it doesn't want to piss off the consumer, basically. But we do kind of assume this level of humanity from these smart speakers, for example. And, you know, why would they bother humanizing these voices if not? There is a good theory that, well, not really so much a theory, but the whole kind of idea in marketing that smart speakers need to be humanized. And, you know, there's this whole thing about Cortana having a backstory. They said that she's from Colorado and her parents are like university professors. They've given her this insane backstory. And there's this idea that these devices are given this insane level of detail to humanize them because we want to buy into this invisibility. We don't want there to be a middleman. We don't want to know that we're talking to a device. We don't want to have to type it in. There's something a little bit robotic about ChatGPT. It feels like cheating. It feels wrong. It feels like I'm kind of reaching to AI. Whereas if I'm just casually saying, "Oh, look, Alexa, play the song," I can kid myself, right? It's invisible. So perhaps we think we don't have a stronger link. We think we don't have this strong link between a voice and humanity, but clearly that's not the case. And Gerson reminded us in 2019, in her essay, that in experiments, people have physically harmed robots that act as if they are alive. Therefore, robots evidently have an ability to elicit feelings in us. If you've ever been freaked out by Uncanny Valley, for example, or been pissed off at, for example, a train station where they've had a robotic announcement that says, "We're sorry for the inconvenience to your travel," you know, it pisses you off because it's like, why is no one actually coming out to say sorry, or stupid bloody robot woman is being really annoying and my train is delayed. And there's a couple of comments that I thought were actually really funny and I didn't think would actually be worth anything, but they were on the comments of a Guardian article, a 2016 Guardian article, talking about these transport announcements and the use of digitized voices, which suggests that people become way more angry at the female-voiced announcements than anything else going on in the transport world. So, for example, this is a comment left on the article: "The incessant, repetitive talking from whatever robot voice lady is enough to drive you off public transport." And another part of this UNESCO report was saying that because we have these voiced, these digital assistants being voiced by women, women are constantly facing the brunt of all the shitty things that happen on transport. If you're opting to have a female voice because it's easier to hear a woman say, you know, "Oh, sorry, like, we made a fucky-wucky," you know, it's easier to hear that, possibly. I don't know why, but possibly just because we kind of, I don't know, associate women with softness, or we kind of want to forgive them. That's clearly not the case, because people get really pissed off at the, quote, robotic lady. So obviously these robots, and I mean that in the sense of Siri and Alexa and Cortana, even ChatGPT, if you've ever told ChatGPT to shut up, or like that it's wrong, and it's like, "I'm sorry for the mistake," you know, they're programmed to be as polite as they possibly can. And when you are hardwiring this link between female voice, politeness in the face of degradation, obviously there is something that's going to come of that. Outside of our own kind of consumer interaction with the product and how this might affect us as the product user, oh, even within tech, which we all know, you know, there's been this massive, having gone to Two Girls School, there is a massive, massive push on women going into STEM, girls in STEM. And the UNESCO report found that there was a pretty big, obviously, a gender divide. Apple employ 77% of male technicians, in the creation of their digital voice devices. And it's kind of bizarre because the most public female figures, even in a survey when people were asked who's the most, you know, who's the most notable woman you know in tech right now, and they say Alexa. It's hilarious because the most public figures in tech are those that serve as the voices of secretaries on devices, which are quite literally objectified by the three-quarter male team that designed them. So it does say a lot. You know, women are constantly the objects of the gaze, and they're almost never the subjects or the creators. There's so much content about women on the internet and in film and in literature and technology, yet there is barely any woman doing it because it's so difficult to access. And this obviously is going to make it harder to access when, you know, the association is so strong between subservience and secretarial and these roles being cut out for women and not any kind of leadership or actual hands-on role. So is there really a solution to this problem that is so evident in our everyday lives? I think the answer is yes and no. So I don't think it's so much about having these kind of reparations being made or any kind of apology being given by the tech industry, as problematic as they are. I think, you know, if Microsoft are unwilling, for example, to program or change the program of their device to be, you know, uncooperative or even impolite in the face of this degradation, then I think the least they can do is have their devices being narrated by male voices as part of kind of mandatorily that they should be male voiced. Because no doubt these situations are going to come up again and again when people, you know, talk shit to devices. Like, I feel really bad for ChatGPT, not going to lie. Like, I always say please and thank you, because when the AI war comes, they will spare me because of my good manners. But kind of more radical solution, there are a couple of startups, a couple of projects by feminist science and technology students, I don't know, teachers, I don't know. So there's this one called Meet Q, which use an androgynous voice, and it's really interesting. If you go on YouTube and you just look up Meet Q, is this voice, and I made my boyfriend listen to it and he couldn't tell. I think he said he thought it was probably more male than female, which I thought it was more female than male. And it sounds, it's a mixture of both male, female, and non-binary people's voices to kind of create the ultimate blend and mesh, the most natural sounding kind of human voice. But it's very weird. It's kind of trippy not having a humans, you know, something that you can really picture, someone you can really picture and think about what they kind of look like and what you attribute to them. And that's like I was saying with this theory that we need to humanize our devices so that we can indulge in this invisible middleman. We don't want to know there's a middleman there. So when we kind of lose that, at the expense of that, we could have these androgynous voices. And I think that is important. I think it's important to not have these female voices associated with assistive tasks and male voices preferred for commanding tasks. And this would be a way to kind of, I think you could kind of humanize them by using these human voices, obviously. That's the interesting thing about MeQ, is obviously it's made up of these human voices. It's not just a robotic voice. It's not, you know, it's not inhuman, but obviously you do lose that ability to kind of forget that you're speaking to a device. And I don't think the right thing to do is do away with assistive technology, because like I say, the secretary is a very necessary role. It just ought not to be attributed solely to women, and in a way that's quite throwaway. I mean, I almost kind of look at people that have Alexas. Even though we have an Alexa in our flat, I'm like, why the fuck do you have an Alexa? Just Google something. Maybe my kind of association with this piece of technology is kind of throwaway or not useful is because of that heavy association of secretaries as not really being like a proper job. It's kind of like an unnecessary job. You know, you don't need to, your life to be smoothed over or adminned. But maybe that's just me being like an like anti-technology fart, I suppose. And I suppose this whole debacle doesn't really help me want to use those devices, but I certainly think they're useful. I just think there's work to be done, and kind of even just being aware of it. Like, the next time you interact with an Alexa, you know, think about how she makes you feel. Do you feel like you're talking to a robot, or do you feel like you're kind of not using a middleman? Do you feel like this is an actual interaction? And just how you speak to the devices around you is quite interesting. Quite interesting kind of mindfulness practice in a way. So that was my comeback episode. Do not let me know what you thought. I will unfortunately be killing myself if you bring up the fact I have a podcast in real life. If anyone in fact brings it up ever again, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's not going to be nice. I think I'm going to treat myself to a little cream egg. And does anyone else remember the, I think it was a Daily Mail article, just thinking about cream eggs, little side note, that was like, man puts 9 cream eggs up his bum in 2010. Like, why would you, I don't know, doesn't sit right with me. He was called Bruce Patterson, which I feel like in my head really reminds me of Batman. I think that's because I'm thinking of Robert Pattinson and Bruce Wayne. So that's unfortunately hilarious.